Hello, and welcome to our podcast on mastering 802.11n. 802.11n promises to let us build bigger, faster wireless networks that deliver better reliability and capacity. But tapping this technology's enormous potential will require new products, careful planning, and a bit of ingenuity. In this podcast, we discuss innovative approaches that you can use to overcome the most common 802.11 deployment barriers, from the pinch of power over Ethernet to bandwidth bottlenecks. And ready to share her expertise on 802.11n is Lisa Pfeiffer. Thanks for spending some time today with us, Lisa. It's great to have you here.
Thank you, Kate. It's good to be here.
So let me review for our listeners how this works. I will ask Lisa about some of the most common 802.11n issues, and she in turn will share her expert advice on how to avoid these issues. Number one, enterprise adoption of 802.11n has been impeded by interoperability concerns. How can companies avoid running into interoperability problems?
Well, Kate, those early pre-N products used multiple input, multiple output, that's MIMO, antennas to overcome some of the range problems that frustrated home users. The thing is that those pre-N products were launched over 3 years ago, and that was long before the IEEE had even agreed on a common approach for the standard. The next round of products based on draft one of the standard fared somewhat better, but big throughput increases that consumers were really expecting still weren't there, and that was particularly true if you combined a pre-N access point from one vendor with a pre-N card from another. Both of those problems were addressed pretty effectively when the Wi-Fi Alliance started testing Draft 2 products last July. Any product that you buy today should be Draft 2 certified, achieve throughput well above 100 megabits per second, and it should play nicely with both legacy 11G and Draft 2 11N cards that are shipping in new laptops today. Of course, the final standard published next summer will include a few tweaks. The most likely areas are legacy coexistence, and some of the options that are not already pretty widely implemented and tested. It is hoped that changes between now and then will require only new firmware, not new hardware, but the truth is we don't really know that for sure. So some companies will wait for the final standard before launching their larger rollouts, and others will ask their vendors for some kind of investment protection, like no-cost upgrade guarantees or field replaceable radios. Even after 11N is done, though, you still do need to be concerned about feature differences. For example, the standard defines 77 possible parameter combinations that determine 11N coding scheme and data rate. To optimize performance, you're going to need to have a good handle on the options that are supported by every device in your network. And so that's why I tell people to invest in strong 11N performance and wireless LAN analysis tools to help them visualize that option support, use, and its consequences on performance.
And a big concern that many companies have about 802.11n is increased power consumption. Can 11n be deployed without costly power over Ethernet upgrades?
Well, most enterprises power their Wi-Fi access points through PoE. The standard for PoE today, 802.3AF, it delivers about 13 watts per port, but some dual radio 11N access points actually consume over 20 watts, depending on their configuration, and that kind of draw would clearly blow away an existing Ethernet switch or mid-span injector power budget. There is a new PoE standard underway called 802.3AT, and it could deliver at least 30 watts of power per port. But even if that standard were done today, the idea of replacing all your Ethernet switches and blades and power supplies, obviously it really could be a showstopper. So fortunately, wireless vendors have gotten creative, finding new ways to support 11N without overhauling PoE infrastructure. Power is consumed in access points by the radios and by their processors. Because 11N radios have multiple transmit-receive chains, they require more power. For example, if you look at a 3x3 MIMO antenna, it draws three times as much power. So one option would be to reduce the number of transmit-receive chains by configuring your access point for something like 2x2 MIMO. Of course, that would mean you don't get the full benefit of 11N. So another solution would be to pair your legacy BG radios with a new 11N radio. That way you don't have two brand new radios both gulping down more power. Your old radio would use less power to support your legacy clients, while your new radio would be used to support those high throughput clients at a higher power rate. Another possible option would be to actually provide more power with a mid-span injector or to double the input power by connecting two PoE ports to each access point. Or you could solve the problem by not using standard PoE at all. And that actually is a great solution if you happen to be a Cisco switch customer, but it's not much help to the rest of us. This PoE problem that we're talking about here is actually going to diminish over time because new chipsets are going to draw less power and new access points will use more power-efficient designs. But in the meantime, what I tell people is to talk to their vendor, ask how your 11N gear can actually fit within your existing power budget. Chances are they have a pretty good recommendation for you to do that.
Some good advice. And number three. Some businesses are worried about overloading their networks with high-throughput wireless traffic. Will 802.11n really create bandwidth bottlenecks, and how can they be avoided?
Well, Kate, in theory, if you replaced every 54 megabit per second legacy access point with one of those new 600 megabit per second 11n access points, your total throughput could grow an order of magnitude. But experience shows that's just not very likely, at least in the near term. There are many factors that affect 11N throughput, including the number of transmit-receive streams, channel width, and protection mechanisms. Also, your legacy clients, they will fare better when they're connected to an 11N access point, but only your new 11N clients can actually achieve data rates beyond 54 megabits per second. For example, if you have a dual access radio access point using 2x2 MIMO to support half-and-half mix of old and new clients, it'll probably carry an aggregate total of about 200 megabits per second. Now, that's far less than 600 megabits per second, but it's still a big increase over that 54. So you do need to plan to support additional load at your wireless controller, at your edge switches, distribution switches, and, of course, in your network core. Each of those could be a potential bottleneck, but the one that you should really be thinking about is your wireless controller and its location in your wired network. Over the years, access points were actually simplified by moving some of the intelligence onto wireless controllers, and that made a lot of sense for control, but as throughput gets higher, dragging all your data through any central point obviously becomes painful. So when you move to 11N, you want to consider the data plane architecture and how you can use it to distribute load. For example, some new access points support local bridging. That's bridging traffic from one local client to another. For example, vendors that do this include Motorola, Colubris, and Trapeze. We're also seeing indoor mesh solutions that can be used to avoid wired backhaul altogether. So the bottom line is that you want to make your data paths as short as you can while still achieving the kind of control that you need.
Number four, most companies that will deploy 802.11n already have 802.11b and g wireless. So Lisa, how can administrators minimize impact on legacy clients during an 802.11n upgrade?
There are really two ways to avoid impact, coexistence and overlay. If your legacy clients are limited to 802.11bg, you could deploy your new N solution at 5 GHz, avoiding the 2.4 GHz band altogether. This approach results in better performance for your new clients while avoiding competition with or impact on your old BG clients. But that means you'd have to dedicate some radios to BG at 2.4 GHz, operating in parallel with your brand new overlay 5 GHz network. The other alternative is that you could run ABG and N in the same band using HT mixed mode for peaceful coexistence. High throughput mixed mode adds an extra preamble and protection mechanisms. They actually degrade the throughput in aggregate, but they let ABG clients hear N clients. And that's really important because the way that 802.11 works is it relies on collision avoidance. Clients actually share channels by sensing when the channel is busy and then transmitting only when the channel is clear. Without HT mixed mode, your ABG clients would just talk right over your N clients, and that would create errors for both of them. So if you must run 802.11n in the 2.4 GHz band, you want to turn on HT mixed mode, stick to 20 megahertz channel width and use dynamic frequency selection to react automatically to interference.
And number 5, airway congestion and co-channel interference are big challenges for today's B and G networks. And they say that 802.11n will add even more traffic to those crowded airways. Do you have any tips for overcoming channel competition, Lisa?
Yeah, I do. In principle, channel planning gets easier with 11n because you have more spectrum to play with. BG was limited to 3 non-overlapping channels and 2.4 gigahertz. A can use 8 or 12 channels depending on the product. N actually gives you both bands with the option to combine two 20 megahertz channels into SATA 40 gigahertz channels. However, the fact that your N access point can be used at 2.4 gigahertz doesn't mean you should do it. As we've discussed, you might want to deploy your N clients at 5 gigahertz, leaving that 2.4 gigahertz for legacy clients. Furthermore, to get the most from your 5 gigahertz band, you'll want to buy products that support dynamic frequency selection, DFS. Now, I say that not just to simplify planning, but actually to give you another 11 channels in the UNI2 extended band, the part of the frequency spectrum that requires DFS. In addition, the days of manual channel and transmit power assignment are coming to an end. Areas covered by N access points are less uniform, influenced in positive ways by multipath. Various vendors offer different solutions to deal with this, from sophisticated wireless LAN planners to fully automated channel and power management. Two vendors, Meru and Extracom, actually avoid co-channel interference altogether by abandoning the traditional microcell approach that we use with most wireless LANs in favor of one big coverage area. It's not clear that that is or is not a good idea, but before you upgrade to 802.11n, you want to spend time thinking about how you allocate and then manage the air.
Issue number 6. During any major network upgrade, unexpected problems and costs are always a concern. What's the best way to avoid surprises when deploying 802.11n?
802.11n is obviously going to be a major upgrade, and chances are you're going to run into a few surprises. Planning is going to be very important. Many of today's best effort networks were designed basically by rule of thumb and then tweaking them a little bit after the fact. But that approach just really won't cut it if you're rolling out a very high-capacity multimedia network. Furthermore, the number of N options make it hard to guesstimate performance. So there's really no substitute for doing your homework with 11N. I mean, performing a thorough site survey, quantifying your business objectives, and then using those as inputs to formally design your wireless LAN. For example, conduct pre- and post-deployment surveys with N clients as well as with BG clients. Take your measurements when radio frequency obstacles like furniture and people are actually there, and observe not just data rate, but application throughput in both directions. With N, data rate is no guarantee of good performance, and metrics like latency and simultaneous sessions are going to be important for some of the newer applications like voice. A LAN planner can't create a good design from bad input, but if you take time to create that good input, a good design can actually help you avoid some expensive retrofits both during and after installation. Also, when you're doing your plan, I recommend building for growth. For example, design for 5 gigahertz coverage areas, even if you start out at 2.4 gigahertz. Finally, you want to include management monitoring and troubleshooting in your budgets. N upgrades are going to be required to some of the tools like LAN analyzers and wireless intrusion prevention systems. And if you don't have those, you'll be flying that big, fast new network in the dark, and you're bound to trip over a few nasty surprises.
Definitely some food for thought. And Lisa, one last question. Deploying 802.11n means spending money. Are there any approaches that can help businesses manage their 802.11n upgrade costs?
Yeah, sure, everybody wants to do a little bit more with less. They want their money to go as far as they possibly can. Many companies have been chomping at the bit to expand wireless, and they've been waiting for the right time in order to make that investment. 802.11n, most analysts say, brings us the speed and reliability that will be sufficient to displace wired Ethernet, at least at the edge of our network for access. When you take that big plunge, you'll want to know that you're spending your money wisely. Considerations we've already talked about, like avoiding power over Ethernet changes and architecting to avoid bottlenecks, will definitely play a big role in your total upgrade cost. But what can you do to defer or even defray some of that cost? As an incentive, some vendors are offering credits when you buy new end products, either to replace Ethernet switch ports or legacy access points. Others are selling new access points with field upgradable radios. That can help you invest in new platforms at a lower cost today and then add more end radios to the same platform down the road. Now, these things can reduce your initial capital investment, but I think it's important that you also look at long-term operational costs. For example, look at management tools that can provision, maintain, and monitor both your old and new access points from a single console, driven by consistent policies and processes. Managing your total cost of operation will actually be a very critical factor as we move from these small, best-effort, hotspot wireless LANs that we have today to large, mission-critical networks in the future.
And unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. Lisa, thanks so much for joining us to share your expertise.
Thank you, Kate. Good to be here.
And to our listeners, thank you for joining us today.